It has often been said that Paul L'Enfant, the designer of Washington, D.C., encoded in those city streets occult symbols to bring about the power of the ages. Well, today, I'm going to talk about one of those roadways. The traffic circle. The circumpunct itself. What has this got to do with Freemasonry? Well, my brethren, as an expatriate, though I was born here in the United States, I grew up in England. I'll often think that I was made in England. As an outsider, if you will, who drives on American roads for the better part of two decades, I would like to share a public service announcement. How to drive a roundabout. There is a way to do it, believe me. And you know what? Traffic circles, roundabouts are very efficient means of dealing with congestion. Much better than a four-way stop sign or a traffic light. And I'd like to give a shout out to the brethren of Abraham Lodge No. 8 in Louisville, Kentucky, and thank them for inviting me down last weekend. I had a fabulous time, met some really wonderful, brilliant brethren, and was deeply touched by our experience together. So I'm going to end this episode with a reading of chapter 35 of the Three Books of Occult Philosophy. Try to resurrect that tome, slap off the dust, get back into the nitty-gritty with Agrippa. But for now, sit back and relax and enjoy the roundabout. Hello and welcome to episode 76 of the Rocky Mountain Mason podcast. I am Ben Williams, your host, and today I thought I would talk about public service. Not public service per se, but a particular example of how you can drive better in the United States. It turns out that among the civilized world, the United States has the highest fatality on roadways. Among all of the developed nations, the U.S. has more deaths related to driving than any other country. And it's a mix of things, I think. It's a mix of poor road conditions, because our infrastructure is crumbling in places for sure. We rely, I think, too heavily on federal dollars for our highways. Wouldn't it be marvelous if, instead of paying the feds this giant tax sum this April, you paid your state a giant tax sum and the feds some sort of puny amount? It's always interesting how the federal tax obligation seems to dwarf the states. And of course, the states are where you live. But anyway, it's the likes of these kind of highway dollars that the federal income tax must be levied in the extreme. So kind of a mix between road conditions, but also just bad driving. I mean, in the United States, you don't take a driver's test in an automatic car. I mean, in a stick shift, you have to take, you can take it in an automatic car, and I think just about everybody does. When I got my license in Maryland, I didn't even drive on the road. I just drove around in a parking lot around some cones, took a test on a computer, and I passed. Now, in the UK and other European countries, you take it on the road in a test vehicle. It's not your own car. It's this crappy little Citroen or some little tiny car. It's got a stick shift in it, of course, and the instructor has mirrors strategically positioned to check your eye movements, because you have to mirror signal, mirror maneuver. If you don't check your rearview mirror before you signal and again after, and then once you have completed the turn, then you get a strike. Three strikes, you fail. One cross, you fail. You're also required to do a hill start, to do a parallel parking, to do an emergency stop, and to drive in limited capacity on parts of the highway, to merge and get off, all of which is quite terrifying when you're, you know, 17 years old in the UK, or 16 in the US. So I think that's part of it too. In Europe, of course, people sensibly obey the lane restrictions on the highway. You know, in the UK, obviously it's the other side of the road, so it's the right lane. But in the United States, the left lane is supposed to be the passing lane. But how often do you see someone just sitting there in a big truck driving the same speed as everybody else? People start overtaking or passing, as you say in the US, on the inside. And the whole thing is this sort of block of moving traffic that is just sort of stuck and insane. And it makes no sense. It's dangerous and it makes people crazy. In Europe, people get out of the way, so you don't really stay in the fast lane unless you're going sort of 90, right? And you are usually using it to pass, and you sort of leapfrog around people. You are taught from the very beginning that the biggest difficulty, the largest challenge facing any driver is other road users. Anyone can drive a car. It's about driving in traffic. So the European driver, hazard I say, is aware of his surroundings or her surroundings. It's drilled in from a very, very, you know, the inception of driving to be aware of other road users. So you're constantly checking your mirrors, as I said, mirror, signal, mirror, maneuver, and you are signaling all the time, even if there's no one there. You just basically are inculcated with signaling what you're doing or indicating, as we say in the UK, and being aware of other road users. So today, what I'm going to talk about is the roundabout, the traffic circle. There is a way to navigate a traffic circle, and there is a way that makes sense, and then there's the way we do it in the US. When you approach a traffic circle, you should signal. You should be signaling, and I'm going to do this from the American perspective. You should single to the right if you're going to take a right turn. In other words, if you're going to leave on the first exit of the traffic circle, you signal right. You only don't signal if you're going to go straight across. So the second exit on most roundabouts have four roads joining, right? The road you're on, then the first exit, which is a right turn, straight across, if you will, which is the second exit, and then the third exit, which is a left turn, even though you're going around the circle. So what you should properly do when entering a traffic circle is you should signal to the right if you're going to take that first exit. If you're going to take the third exit, you signal left and you keep that signal on as you go round the circle. And then when you come up to the exit, you stop and you signal right to signal I'm leaving the traffic circle. You only don't signal if you're going straight across. No signal means I'm not turning, I'm going straight. You know, no surprises there. Why do I say this? Well, because traffic circles are deadly in the United States. We have one up the road here, which I used to love coming off Alameda Avenue onto. And I'd come down Sims, I'd go around one traffic circle, I'd go down another. And as much as people hate roundabouts and traffic circles, they're a remarkably efficient way of handling traffic. 10 times better than a four-way stop sign, right? It keeps traffic moving. And if people obey these simple rules, people don't have accidents. And while it slows traffic down when it's congested, it yet allows traffic to move without that sort of stop, start plague that plagues the United States. So when you go in, you signal right, you go straight, you don't signal. If you're taking the third exit, you go to the left. What if there's a fifth exit or a fourth exit or what have you? Typically, you go, if you're going past that central line, you're going to signal left and you're going to stay in the circle. Click, 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 click. It means I'm in the circle. Then you're going to exit to the right by signaling to the right to say, hey, look, I'm gonna exit. Well, this roundabout that we had coming down Sims from 285 was basically seized by the county because there'd been a number of accidents. There's two lanes that went into it and they went around and people just kept crashing because they weren't doing this. So instead they made like one lane have to turn to the right. They put a giant concrete block in the middle of the road and made kind of an exit lane from the traffic circle. So now you have the whole traffic pattern is messed up. You can't both enter the traffic circle in both lanes, because apparently people can't figure out that they need to be on the inside lane if they're turning left and the outside lane if they're going to exit or go straight. You could go in both lanes and go straight. Now you have to get into the inside lane. You have to go on the inside of the circle and then cross out. It makes absolutely no sense. And in a way, it's more dangerous than it was. The only reason it's not more dangerous than it was is because people did not know how to signal in the way it was before. So now you're forced into these lanes. It slows it down. It basically makes it choppy. It merges traffic in an inconvenient way. It makes entering the circle stupid, and it makes exiting the circle stupid. Before was better, but, you know, no one knows how to signal because no one really cares about anybody else, apparently, on the American roadways. No one's really looking. You know, so as a Brother Mason, if you have the square and compasses on your car, which incidentally I don't, but if you do, then I think you need to be an exemplary driver. Just like if the square and compasses adorns a book, it should represent a seal of quality, right? Not only is it, oh, this is a Masonic tome, this is a Masonic book, this is a Masonic lodge, it should signal goodwill, brand identity, like a trademark. It should signal a level of confidence and trust. And it's a shame in the modern era that it doesn't. And I can give you many examples. There was a time when you could go down to the local hardware store, and because you were a Mason, they would give you something on credit, and your word was good enough. I mean, no more, right? I rang up the University of Denver years ago in hopes of setting up a university lodge, because there'd been some success with university lodges in the UK, particularly in Oxford and Cambridge and the like. And DU's got a beautiful campus. It was founded by a Mason, John Evans, the second governor of the Colorado Territory, appointed by none other than Abraham Lincoln, who was a personal friend of his. Evans affiliated back in Attica, Ohio in the early 1840s and became a charter member of Union Lodge No. 7. He founded Denver University in 1864. And, you know, I rang up the department there and said, hey, we're interested in maybe, you know, founding a Masonic Lodge. And like, the what? Who? The Masons? What is that? And I'm like, oh, okay, well, great, you know. we helped found your university back in the day. Oh, okay, you know, no idea, none. So if you have the square and compasses on your car, you are a representative, you know, of our fraternity. You are wearing it in a public way, which I think is a little bit, you know, dodgy, to be honest with you. But luckily, we live in a country where that is not a concern. There's many countries where you can't do that. There's many countries where, even though you can, the past and caution has dictated that the brethren do not signalize their membership in any overt, visible fashion at all. No rings, no Masonic jewelry, few understated Masonic ties, but you kind of have to be in to recognize them, you know. But in the U.S., God bless America, you can signalize your Masonic membership overtly and as gaudily as you deem fit. So if you're driving, you know, around the traffic circle, you're driving on the highway, it behooves you, I think, to be aware of other road users, to use the passing lane as a passing lane, and ensure that you're not holding up traffic and generally being considerate. You know, my wife, who recommended this topic, by the way, since I was sort of drawing a short straw and I was about to got to get on a plane tomorrow to fly down to Louisiana, so I'm sort of trying to do this to keep the episodes consistent. She said, well, why don't you do something about the roundabout? You know, and then you could bring in a Masonic connection. And even though I just have, what I said to her was, yeah, sure, they both go round in circles. Well, brethren, I just returned from a really wonderful Masonic weekend in Louisville, Kentucky, where I was honored and privileged to speak at Abraham Lodge No. 8. Fantastic lodge of enthusiastic, well-prepared, humble Masons, and I hope they stay humble. I'm giving them a shout out, and I think, you know, there's always a danger that when you do something so well, that it changes your personality, but I don't think it will for these brethren. An absolutely outstanding group of brothers and an outstanding lodge meeting. Everything done from memory, full form, incredible floor work. And, you know, often you bring speakers in to share light in Masonry, but I can tell you, brethren, that my visit to Abraham No. 8, I left with certainly more light than I shared. And I appreciate light adding to light to just spread the goodwill of the craft. They have formed the Green Lion Masonic Society out of a couple of lodges that have an aspiration for education and, you know, esoteric studies. And this is a free platform where members of the craft can attend and share quarterly in kind of like a mini symposium where a number of talks are given, ideas and discussion are exchanged. Then they have a lodge meeting, and then they have a banquet festive board. Full day and, well, full afternoon anyway, and absolutely fantastic. Great talks all around. I'm not going to say too much because I don't want to, you know, preempt John's efforts, but I will say there was a presentation by Brother John Gilbert that I think will gain a lot of interest among members of our fraternity, and I think even academia, regarding new translations of the Emerald Tablet. And I'll leave it at that because I think maybe we'll get John on here to talk about it at some point, but regardless, why do I say all this? Well, one, because I wanted to give those guys a shout out and recommend if any of you listeners are interested in seeing a lodge as it can be done. It's taken them a decade to get to this place where they have wonderful ambiance and memory perfect work. Go to Louisville, reach out to Abraham Lodge number 8 and visit them, you know, and then take some ideas home. But in talking after the banquet with some of the well-informed brethren there, as we are charged so to do, you will recall, best part of Masonry, in my opinion, it was mentioned, you know, this podcast came up and, you know, the readings of the 3 books of occult philosophy, which I have left by the wayside, I think really out of some sort of paranoia because it's rather weird material. And I think the last one we did was probably around episode 63, and it was chapter 34 of the 3 books of occult philosophy. So I would like, with your permission, brethren, to continue now with chapter 35. Chapter 35 of the Mixtions of Natural Things, One with Another, and Their Benefit. It is most evident that in the inferior nature all the powers of superior bodies are not found comprehended in any one thing, but are dispersed through many kinds of things amongst us, as there are many solary things, whereof every one doth not contain all the virtues of the sun, but some have some properties from the sun, and others other some. Wherefore, it is sometimes necessary that there be mixtions in operations, that if 100 or 1,000 virtues of the sun were dispersed through so many plants, animals, and the like, we may gather all these together, and bring them into one form, in which we shall see all the said virtues being united and contained. Now there is a twofold virtue in commixtion. One, viz., which was first planted in its parts, and is celestial. The other is obtained by a certain and artificial mixtion of things mixed amongst themselves, and of the mixtions of them according to certain proportions, such as agree with the heaven under a certain constellation. And this virtue descends by a certain likeness and aptness that is in things amongst themselves towards their superiors. And as much as the following do by degrees correspond with them that go before, where the patient is fitly applied to its agent. So, from a certain composition of herbs, vapors, and such like, made according to natural philosophy and astronomy, there results a certain common form, endowed with many gifts of the stars, as in the honey of bees, that which is gathered out of the juice of innumerable flowers, and brought into one form, contains the virtue of all, by a kind of divine and admirable art of the bees. Yet this is not to be less wondered at, which Exodus Gideus reports of an artificial kind of honey, which a certain nation of giants in Libya knew how to make out of flowers, and that very good, and not far inferior to that of the bees. For every mixture which consists of many several things is then most perfect when it is so firmly compacted on all parts that it becomes one, is everywhere firm to itself, and can hardly be dissipated, as we sometimes see stones and diverse bodies to be by a certain natural power conglutinated and united, that they seem to be wholly one thing, as we see 2 trees by grafting to become one. Also oysters with stones by a certain occult virtue of nature, And there have been seen some animals which have been turned into stones, and so united with the substance of the stone that they seem to make one body, and that also homogeneous. So the tree ebony is one while wood, and another while stone. When, therefore, anyone makes a mixture of many matters under the celestial influences, then the variety of celestial actions on one hand, and of natural powers on the other hand, being joined together, doth indeed cause wonderful things, by ointments, by collieries, by fumes, and such like, which, viz., are read in the book of Chiramis, Archita, Democritus, and Hermes, who is named Alcorat, and of many others. Right. Okay. Well, to unpack some of this stuff briefly, because I will keep this to half an hour. Essentially, Agrippa is saying here that these heavenly virtues signified by the celestial places, planets, stars, and such what, come through the spheres, if you will. And this is not like a light ray coming through space, because even the solar system is Malchut and is part of the kingdom. So before it comes here to the kingdom and coalesces as Mars, if you will, or Jupiter, say, it comes into the kingdom mixed by the sphere of Mercury and through the sphere of Lavana, the moon. And it is mixed. He keeps saying this word, or the translator, Mr. Freak, James Freak, keeps using the term mixture. Sort of an admixture, we might say, an admixture of certain bodies. But the rays, I don't want to use that term, the virtues are separated, as it were, in part of their descent into the grossness of the kingdom, as light is split through the prism into the seven colors. And so it is that the solary virtues, in the example he gave, may be manifested in dandelions and marigold and elsewhere thereabouts, in stones and plants and parts of plants, just as the rose, significant of love and the beloved, because it unites the Venusian velvet of the petals and that deep color red with the hardness and the sharpness of the thorn of Mars, and represents man and woman united. So these virtues are mixed between bodies and among bodies, wherefore they can be again separated and joined together in a particular moment, at a particular time in the calendar, with particular intentions, so that we have these remarkable ointments, as he says, I would say medicines perhaps, but other compositions and incenses certainly, which of themselves resonate the collected virtues, and signify the whole. I would therefore point out, I think, also his mention of the bees. And while I don't necessarily want to go into the giants in Libya that he mentioned that were apparently able to make a kind of lesser honey that wasn't much inferior to the bees, I would potentially read footnote 2 from the Donald Tyson critical edition of the Three Books of Occult Philosophy, which is what I'm reading here. And the giants in Libya. Libya is supposed to have been the birthplace of Antaeus, the giant who wrestled Hercules. And I'm going to read here from Pharsalia by Lucan. He says that Earth, not as yet barren, after the giants being born, conceived a dreadful offspring in the Libyan caves. Nor to the earth was Typhon so just a ground of pride, or Titius and the fierce Briareus, and she spared the heavens in that she did not bring forth Antaeus in the Phlegrian fields. By this privilege as well did the earth redouble the strength so vast of her offspring, in that when they touched their parent, the limbs now exhausted were vigorous again with renewed strength. This cavern was his abode. They report that under the lofty rock he lay concealed, and had caught lions for his food. For his sleep, no skins of wild beasts were wont to afford a bed, no wood a couch, and lying on the bare earth, he recovered his strength. Well, that almost seems completely irrelevant to what we're talking about, other than, I guess, establishing that history does record giants among us. Anyway, that's a whole different ball of wax. But back to the honey. What I wanted to say, of course, was honey not only is a symbol of the bees and their industry in bringing together the pollen from all these different species and collecting them mercurially and making this honey, this substance, is why every lodge, if possible, and certainly most churches, used to and should still today use beeswax candles. And if you can't get, 100% honey candles, because they're expensive, at least go for 51%. Get away from the paraffin candles, which are basically oil-based. So while you're burning a paraffin candle, what you're really doing is producing a vapor, a pestilential vapor of dioxins and, diesel fuel, if you like, into the lodge room. Whereas when you burn honey in this manner, just as Pythagoras made the hecatomb of oxen allegedly out of honey, made those little sort of sculptures that he sacrificed, him being a vegetarian, according to some Rosicrucian traditions at any rate. So the burning of the candle offers up a sweet elixir in place of its light. And is a very fitting symbol, especially considering of the mixtures of natural things, one with another, and their benefit that Agrippa has enlightened us with tonight. Well, thank you for listening this far. If you've enjoyed this podcast, you might like our magazines. Check out RockyMountainMason.com, EsotericMason.com, Solve et Coagula, Separate and Recombine. Separate the fine from the gross. You've heard these words before. Perhaps they've taken on a new meaning. But until next time, take care and Godspeed.